Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. First application on the list today is ICMP Info. And you may or may not realize that you've used ICMP before. You almost certainly have. It is the protocol that, for instance, Ping uses. So if you've ever pinged a server with the ping command, you have sent ICMP packets to some other place. And ICMP is an interesting protocol because it doesn't require, it doesn't look for a specific port the way, say, HTTP does, or SSH, or FTP. It's a broadcast that you send. There's information in the header and the body of the packet of the message that you're sending, and there's a variety of things that the little bits of information can identify itself as. The most common, certainly the one that we would know from ping, is an echo request, meaning I'm sending you a message, now confirm that. Actually, is that the echo request? Well, there's something that essentially is asking for confirmation that yes, you've received this message. And you can look up the ICMP protocol. You can find out the different numbers, the number values for the different header data, and discover what the ICMP message is asking. It's not a complex protocol. It is something that's designed to be minimal. It doesn't require a whole lot of interaction. It doesn't require a specific port. It is just a message that you're sending across a network at a place. And when that place receives something identifying itself as an ICMP packet, then, or I think, I keep saying packet, I believe if memory serves, it's a datagram, technically speaking. That's what it's called. It's a datagram, ICMP datagram, which essentially is a packet. I mean, that's basically what it is. Some header data and some data, and I think that's about it, actually. Like I say, it's really minimal. So you receive this datagram, and based on the settings of the server, you respond to it, or you ignore it silently, or, you know, you do whatever you do with that datagram. There are conflicting schools of thought, I would say, on what maybe conflicting is too strong a word. You can deal with ICMP in lots of different ways as a server admin. You could say, you could have you could assert that when you receive an ICMP packet or datagram, it is best to ignore it silently. That way, you're basically running silent. Your server, you know, like someone's sending out traffic. If you respond to that traffic, then they know that you exist. If you silently drop the datagram and don't respond in any way, then they don't know whether they've hit something or whether it's just traveling forever in the depths of outer space. So that's one theory. That's not my preferred theory in theory. My theory is that you should respond to ICMP traffic because that it's a valid means of troubleshooting. Like that's ICMP is a thing that has been designed so that we can sort of find our ways around a network. It's usually very helpful, and so I like to respond to them. Now, that said, I've never adminned a server that is just wildly open to all kinds of targeted attacks. And ICMP is indeed frequently used for attacks, not very sophisticated attacks. They're DDoS attacks, denial of service attacks, where you just flood a server with, for instance, ICMP, and the server is so busy responding to your ICMP and then load balancing because it's got a million ICMP datagrams that it has to deal with, and so then it has to shunt a bunch of them off to another server in its cluster, or, you know, whatever your setup is. You just tie up the server so that it doesn't have time to do anything else because it's just dealing with your sort of perfunctory, like, hello world messages. So I've never had to deal with that in real life. So maybe if I was a high target server admin, maybe I would feel differently. And maybe I would think, yeah, ICMP is going to be dropped completely silently. People will not know if this IP address that they've just tried to spam is valid in any way. So I don't know. There are, like I say, different schools of thoughts. And I think there's probably a good argument that the correct answer just depends on you, really, on the risks and sort of realities that you have to deal with as an admin. But anyway, all of that kind of has nothing to do with ICMP info. ICMP info is kind of the receiving, it's the verbose receiving end to an ICMP datagram. So ICMP info is a little application that you have to run with sudo, as I just remembered. And the moment that you launch it, it sort of takes over your prompt, and it's just monitoring for ICMP datagrams. Now, interestingly, one thing it is not monitoring for by default is, or rather, the one of the things that it ignores by default are pings. So ICMP underscore echo underscore reply. Okay, yeah, so those are echo requests. So that is ignored by default. If you want to activate ICMP info with pings not being ignored, then you can do a dash VV, like verbose. So one dash V, verbose, dash V gives information about all ICMP packets except a ping. Dash VV gives all the information, including pings. And then dash VVV includes an ASCII or hex dump of each packet that you receive, which is quite interesting. So this is a really fun little utility. You can launch sudo ICMP info on your on one computer in your lab, and then ping that computer from another computer in your lab, and you'll see the you'll see whether you know, you'll see either a hex dump of the datagram if you go with dash VVV, or just a record of the ping and where it's from if you do a dash of VV, and any other kind of ICMP if you just do a dash of V. So try that out. It is super easy. It's sudo ICMP info dash VV, and then go to some other computer, or heck, if you can't be bothered, just open up another tab on your same computer and ping your own IP address, and then look at the output of ICMP info. It's very, very interesting. So that's what that is, ICMP info. Next up is iftop. Iftop is like top, you know, the top for the CPU load monitor, except iftop does, you know, gives that information to you for your network interfaces. And it's another really cool one to just kind of really launch and monitor. So sudo iftop, and you'll start seeing sort of, you'll start seeing indications that there's activity on your network. No surprise there, probably. And it shows whether it's incoming or outgoing, the cumulative bandwidth, the peak bandwidth that you're using, and so on. So this is a lot of fun to just keep open in the background while you do unexpected things, whether it's going to, I don't know, YouTube and watching a bunch of videos, or launching, you know, a video game that needs an update, or launching, you know, pulling down an update, a software update or something, and just watch all of the activity as it happens. It is quite fascinating. I mean, it can be a little bit maybe cryptic, because you do get things that just, are these URLs? Like, what are these things? And I mean, such as the modern internet, right? I mean, you're bouncing off of all kinds of weird places. If you have a VPN activated as well, then you're going to likely see some interesting traffic routes through that as well. So yeah, it's a fascinating exercise, whether or not you know what you're seeing. Honestly, it's still worth doing. I mean, it's worth doing and understanding what's happening too. But I mean, it has to start somewhere. So this is using something like PCAP, and it just shows you, and it resolves the host names by default. I believe you can turn that off with some flag that I don't remember. Dash N, do not use hostname lookups. So then you just see a bunch of numbers. It's a great little, you know, like, I hesitate to say that it's like Wireshark Lite, but it's definitely a, you know, it's within that sort of class of information. Like you get to see a lot of the stuff happening, not necessarily in the background, but yeah, a little bit in the background. It's certainly not something that's usually very easy to find, but you launch IFTTOP and you just see it right there. So I don't know. I think it's a really, really cool application for network observation. Launch it, just keep it open. And then sometime when you click a button and you think that might be interesting to see what I really just did, go look at IFTTOP. You know, it'll be entertaining. It'll be informative. Something. It will make your screen light up, possibly, depending. I mean, a lot of the, you know, buttons on the internet these days, I mean, it goes through a single sign-on or a handoff of some sort, you know, and you look at the traffic and it just kind of, sometimes it can be very surprising. Speaking of traffic on the internet, how does all that internet traffic get sorted? Well, one of the ways that it gets sorted is INetD. INetD is a daemon, or is it daemon? More on that later, probably. It's a daemon that runs in the background of Slackware, and it is designed to sort of be a daemon of daemons. It essentially sits on your computer listening for internet activity, you know, network traffic coming into your computer, and it figures out, when it receives something, it figures out what kind of service is required for the thing that it has just received. And then maybe it launches some new daemon to handle that service. Or maybe it knows what that daemon is and where that daemon sort of lives, and so it knows to route the traffic over to it and so on. So that's INetD. There are a couple of different versions of INetD. The one that Slackware uses, as it says in the description of the package itself, this version of INetD was ported from OpenBSD. I don't know why Pat uses the one from OpenBSD and not the one. I think there's a GNU one. I think there's probably some others. Whatever reason it is, I'm imagining that it has a lot to do with it being easy to port. I mean, unless it's just that much better than any other INetD in existence, but I'm imagining like it probably is just a nice self-standing INetD daemon, or INet daemon, that Pat probably just figured was the one to use. And this is the strength of that classic Unix programming. I mean, it's a self-standing application that is portable, and so you port it to your distribution and you run it, and it takes care. It does all of the things that it's supposed to do. It's really quite beautiful. I used to get confused about INetD because I always thought, well, I'm just using. You know, like at the time, it would have been Wicked, WICD, for wireless. I'm not saying this made sense. I'm just saying, like, in my mind, like, you see a bunch of daemons being listed, and you just think, well, I'm using Wicked, or I'm using iwconfig directly, and I'm launching DHCPCD myself, or whatever, or DH client, whatever. Do I need INetD? Well, yeah, INetD has nothing to do with how you connect to the internet. It has everything to do with listening to those connections, coming in at specific internet sockets, and figuring out what program is required to service that request. So you do need INetD to run on Slackware. I mean, unless you're not on the internet, but you do want it to run. It is a very handy little application, but really most of what it does is it hands stuff off to other things. It's very important, but in terms of like of its function, it's like it's not really, you know, it's more of an aggregation service rather than a triage service rather than a service itself. All right, let's talk about IP Route 2. I think we've talked about this already, to be honest. Back when I did the sort of intro to everything network. Let me just confirm. Espen. Oh, no, I didn't really. I didn't. Yeah, I did some. Okay. So the IP command is contained within IP route 2, as is S. Did we talk about SS? I'm not sure that we talked about SS. We might not have. Bridge, I feel like we probably talked. Ifstat, that's a good one. So yeah, there's a bunch of things in here in this package IP route 2 that you're gonna use eventually one way or another when doing networking from a terminal interface on Linux. The IP command is the easy target here, and the way that you are likely to encounter the IP command is the first time that you want to know your IP address. Your about 50-50% chance of encountering the IP command at that point. I say 50-50 because there's still that old ifconfig command out there that's perfectly serviceable, even though everyone keeps saying, nope, that's deprecated, stop using it. It still works, so it doesn't feel all that deprecated to anybody, I guess, but the developers keep telling everyone that ifconfig is gone, IP is the way to go. So I don't know. I don't know why both of them exist at this point, but IP, I have come to like it. It is a little bit, it's a bit terse. It just kind of gives you most of the information that you need and doesn't really trouble you too much about how it all gets formatted. I think the formatting of all these commands are surprisingly not great. I wonder if there's a better way to format them, but that's what we've got. So IP. IP is structured as one of those kind of commands nouveau where you have a command and then like sort of a subcommand or a verb. And then once you've defined sort of where you want to go after the IP command, then you have a set of yet more options after that. So for instance, you could do IP, well, let's do IP dash dash, nope, sudo IP dash dash help tells you that the usage is IP options and then object and then command. Now the object can be something like address, adder label, AMT, FOU, help, imrule, imroute, monitor, and so on. Neighbor, netconf, lots of stuff there. And options can be lots of different things. So the command ends up being structured like sudo IP address, ADDRESS, for instance, I guess dash dash help. Nope, that can't do that. Just the word help. There we go. Okay, so now we're within the address sort of sub command or object, I guess is what they're calling it. Now, what can we say after address? I'm actually looking for the thing that I already know and I can't find it, which probably isn't a great sign. Yeah, I can't find it. I don't know how you would know how to do this. I'm probably just missing it as I kind of frantically scan the screen. I don't see it though. That's really interesting. Ah, there it is. Fourth from the top, actually. So IP address show, and then you can also give, for instance, a device interface name. So I could say, I guess I'd have to say sudo IP address show, and then let's do, actually, I don't even know what, I guess eth0 would be probably the interface name. So I'll eth0. Sure enough, that gives me just eth0, just the output for eth0, and it gives me my IP address and my IP version 6 address and my MAC address and so on. So it gives me all the information that you would if you were used to seeing from ifconfig. And because of the way that the command is structured, you kind of assemble it from object to option to parameter and so on. Now, you don't have to define the device name. You can say sudo IP address show, and you'll get all of your devices and all of the IP addresses assigned to each address. So that would at least include the loopback device, LO, which would get mapped to 127.0.0.1, which we've talked about in the previous in previous episodes, and then ETH0 in my case, because I've got a hardwire here, but I've also got a WLAN0, but there's no IP address because it's not on. There's a virtual bridge, which we've talked about in a previous episode, and that actually does have an IP address, 192.168.1.2.2.1, TUN0, that's the tunnel. So yeah, there's a lot going on this computer that you don't really always think about. So that's the easy path to, I guess, the IP command. But of course, that's not all you can do with the IP command. There's a bunch of other objects, as they call them, or subcommands, I guess, as I think of them. And we've used one before in a previous episode about when I was, you know, talking about basic networking concepts. And that was the sudo IP address add, and then some address, like, I don't know, 192.168.0.1, and then device ETH0. So that would be, or I guess, well, yeah. So, I mean, you would be adding, you'd be setting your IP address is what that does. Sudo IP address add means add this address to this device. Now, whether that'll work or not, and whether that'll serve any kind of purpose for you depends on your network setup, your computer setup. If you're using Network Manager, then you don't really need to go in and set your own IP address. But say you had to, well, that would be how you would do it, sudo IP address add. And then the IP address, the numbers that you want to set, and then dev, D-E-V, and then the name of the device that you want to set that IP address to. And where the name of the device is listed as the first item in the output of sudo IP address show. And there's probably, you know, who knows, probably some other command within IP that you don't even have to get show. You could probably just list devices or something. Although I don't know off the top of my head what that would be. It may be that the canonical way to do that might be to just show all of the addresses. I'm not sure. I don't really see it. So anyway, that's one way to utilize IP. And there's a bunch of other stuff in IP as well. Again, like, there's here where object equals address label, amount, and so on. There's one called route, R-O-U-T-E. So you could do sudo IP route and view your routes that are set up within your computer, how traffic exits your computer to different, you know, to different destinations. Because, and I say that because, I mean, certainly the default for me is through the router in my house, but there are other routes that are necessary. So, you know, for my VPN, it's got to go through that TUN0. For my virtual machines that I run, it's got to go through the BR0, the little bridge at 192.168.1.2.2.0. So there are definitely different routes set up here, and that's kind of important to know about. A lot of that's being set up automatically by a network manager, so I don't have to worry about it. But if I had to worry about it, if I needed to set it, which again I did in the networking basics episode that I did, then that's one way I could do it. That's not the only way. There are other programs that let you do that, specifically the route command. But IP command in IP route 2 has an IP route function to it that you could use if you didn't have anything else available, or if you just preferred the syntax of IP of the IP command. Okay. So that is the IP command, but that's not all that's in the IP route 2 package. There are a bunch of other commands, including ARPD. ARP is the address resolution protocol. It was defined ages ago, back when networking was, you know, relatively young, like I think, what, 1983 or 2 or something, in RFC number like 826. So it's way back there. It is an official internet standard, and what it does is it address resolution, meaning that it figures out what MAC address is assigned an IP address. And that is important because, you keep sort of going down this path of like, well, how does a computer know where, how does a computer know where another computer is? Well, it's IP address. It's like a phone book, blah, blah, blah. You know, you just find it. Well, yeah, but who's got that IP address? Like, how do we know who that IP address is actually assigned to? Like, how do we know there's a physical entity assigned to an IP address? And at some point, you just have to get down to that firmware layer, the data link layer in sort of the traditional networking terminology. You have to marry numbers that you invent with software to numbers that you've invented with firmware, because at least the firmware is burned into a chip, and that you can sort of more or less believe, yes, okay, well, there's a MAC address, there is a physical thing to which this number is significant. Now, of course, there are ways to spoof MAC addresses as well, so how reliable that is, you know, I mean, it's not a GPG key. It's not like confirming identity by any means, but it is saying, yes, there's a physical device here assigned with this arbitrary string of numbers that you're going to use for communication. Okay, so, and it would be kind of interesting to know how much, I don't know, but I wonder how much just kind of like, you know, really old school networking, like ring token stuff. How much carryover, like did a network protocol ever use just MAC addresses? I feel like that might have been a thing at some point, even if or some precursor to a MAC address or something. You know, like that must have been a thing, right? Before we started abstracting, like, oh, we have, okay, now we've got too many computers. Let's just let the computer come up with a number for itself. Well, yeah, but if we do that, then how do we get back down to the firmware? Well, we'll use this ARP thing. Yeah, I don't know. I've not read up enough about kind of the evolution of networking to know sort of why that has developed. Okay, let's see. There's a bridge command. Bridge is a very sort of on the nose command to manage network bridges. These network bridges, of course, are just false pretend little things that you create within software to bridge a network connection from one place to another. It is a kind of sort of a software defined network hub in a way, or switch, you know, kind of. So it's really useful. I think I've talked about it before. It's something that you insert, you know, through software, you insert into your sort of networking stack, and you just declare that a bridge exists, and the bridge has this IP address. And then you set in your, for instance, your virtual machine, you tell your virtual machine that its router is maybe this bridge. Great. Now you've got a virtual machine talking to your bridge, and you've got your real machine capable of accessing your virtual machine. Why? Because you've inserted this bridge. There's this place, there's this common location where you can go and send signals back and forth. So there are a lot of applications here, and I'm not going to cover them all because they're not exactly all of equal weight. I mean, there's DCB, which is data center bridge settings. Great. Don't know what that is. There's DevLink. That's a great way to sort of really dig into what your kernel is seeing and translate it into potentially useful information that you might need. I get the feeling that it's maybe for like driver development specifically. I could be wrong about that. I found a bunch of documentation about it on kernel.org. So I kind of thought, okay, well, maybe it's driver stuff. But like DevLink port show, and then the, you know, listing the kernel path to a specific device, like a networking device, like PCI/0000:06:00:0.0/2. I mean, that probably won't exist on your computer, but that's the example given on kernel.org. So yeah, seems like a useful thing, but not generally useful. There is ifstat. That's pretty cool. Ifstat gives you a pretty printed list of, you know, your interface stats. So for instance, ETH0, the RX errors and drop rate has been 1984.0. TX package rate has been 1855 with TX errors drop 0. RX data rate 678.381, and so on. So you get data about your actual interfaces, and that's loopback, ETH0, virtual bridge, and tunnel 0. Somewhat related, not really, but a sudo route L lists all of the routes on your computer. You remember that you could get that with sudo ip route as well. But this route L is kind of a script that gives it to you in a little bit of a prettier format, a nice column view and with like column labels, you know. So instead of reading a line of like 10.0.1.0/24, proto kernel link ETH0, you know, then instead you get 10.0.1.0 or whatever, and then you get protocol in the column header, kernel, scope, link, dev ETH0 or VIR BR0 or whatever. So it's a very nice kind of column view of the route data that you would get anyway from IP route. And there are others. There's RTMon. SS actually probably does, that does deserve a little bit of a mention really quick. So if you've ever seen online or in a book a reference to a command called netstat, then SS is, again, kind of the way that IP is supposed to be the replacement for ifconfig. SS is the declared replacement for netstat. Now, a lot of people are going to think, why do we need a replacement for netstat? Netstat still works. And indeed it does. If you type in netstat right now, I think should work. Should give you a bunch of information. Yep, it does. Gives you a bunch of information about the state of various sockets on your network, in your networking stack. And it does so perfectly legitimately with lots of great information. But for whatever reason, and I don't know that reason, I haven't looked into it that much anyway, supposedly netstat is, I don't know, it needs a replacement apparently. So SS exists. Whether or not you use it, or netstat, it doesn't, you know, it's up to you. But SS by default gives you a good amount of information, whether it's the amount of the exact information you want, you know, from your netstat replacement is up to you, because it does differ. It's not like a one for one. Like, if you're used to netstat, the output of SS is not really going to make sense immediately. It is unique. I don't exactly understand why that would be. I would think that the replacement for a thing would be really immediately sort of like giving you the exact same information in the exact order, but that's not the choice that has been made. And again, I'm not saying this sarcastically. I'm just saying I don't know. I've not done the research to figure out sort of like, why is that any different? So anyway, SS by default, if you just type in SS, hit return, then you're going to get things, you're going to get a bunch of columns, and it'll go way off your screen, so maybe piping it to less or something would be good. But the first thing you get is net ID, and that's the type of socket you're looking at. So it might be a Unix stream, or U_str, or TCP, or ICMP, and so on. Then you get the state of that socket, and you'll get strings like estab, like established, or uncon, like unconnected, and then the next column over is receive q, that's the number of packets received, send q, that's the number of sent packets, from this socket that you're looking at, local address, /port. So that's the local address and the port or equivalent when you're talking about Unix sockets. And then peer address /port. So that's the thing on the other side. So local address is you. Remote address is the thing that you were talking to or listening to. Okay. You can just list listening sockets. If you just want to find out what's listening on your system, SS -L for listen. You can do all -A for all. You can filter it down to just specific kinds of traffic. You want to just see the TCP, then use the -T option. You want to see UDP? -U then. You can look at just the Unix sockets, or just the just IPv4 traffic, or just IPv6 traffic, and so on. So you can make some educated, maybe not guesses, but educated decisions about what you need to see about what's happening on a machine, and use SS to really kind of dig in and see what exactly is happening. And that can be really important, because it is really hard sometimes to understand what your computer is really doing, especially if you've got INetD just opening daemons and sending traffic, you know, like responding to traffic that way, and you don't know about it. It's not like you get, like, I don't know, pop-up notifications like, hey, I'm currently talking to a phone home message that this application that you just launched has caused me to do. You don't get that. So if you look at SS and you look at what's happening on your system at any given time, you can learn some interesting things. And it's a lot like all the other tools that we've been talking about, IFTOP and IFSTAT even, and Route. Like, it's kind of one of those things where you don't know, you may not even know what you're looking for at first, but if you look at it often enough, then you do start to understand, you know, like, sort of what's normal, what kind of activity normally happens when you go to that website or when you launch this application or whatever. And it can be pretty educational. It can be pretty eye-opening, or not. Like, it can be the opposite. It can just be like, yeah, this seems pretty mundane again, and that's not very exciting. And, you know, I mean, heck, going your entire life without ever seeing anything exciting, I mean, that's an enviable position to be in sometimes. So, you know, enjoy that if that's what happens. But IP route to lots of little applications to play around with. I've actually covered more than I realized I would. So play around with some of those commands if you're interested in networking, because you do tend to get some really interesting results. It may not be outstanding. It might not be anything to raise a red flag about. It may, like I say, be very mundane, but it's just kind of good to know what that looks like. It's a way of seeing, really, like, kind of, you know, the world through a different lens. Like, you're watching, like, these sort of messages that I don't want to say they're secret, because that makes it seem like it's being hidden or something, but it's not readily obvious unless you look for it, and these are the tools that help you look for them. And then other components like IP route, bridge, things like that. You're not looking for stuff, but you're setting things up, which is good too. And I would say, broadly speaking, it's time to set up a cup of coffee for yourself and for me. Let's go do that. We'll come back, talk about a little bit of listener feedback, and then finish up the show. And we're back. Cups of coffee have been acquired. I trust you. You'll trust me, of course, that I have coffee. And let's talk about some listener feedback from Charles on Mastodon. Says, on the GNU World Order episode where you were expositing regarding the demon and daemon pronunciation, I found out from the Secret History of Western Esotericism podcast that daemon, D-A-E-M-O-N, or diphthong, D-A-E, diphthong, M-O-N, is pronounced diamond, it would have to be diamond, and is a Greek word for an entity with demigod abilities, and it has neither a good nor evil connotation. Christianity later perverted the word into demon, D-E-M-O-N, with sort of an exclusively evil connotation, which I'm imagining, this is Klaatu, I'm imagining Dante probably can take the blame for that. I mean, so much of modern, as I understand it, I'm not a religion scholar or anything, but as I understand, a lot of modern sort of mythology and sort of rules around sort of Christian faith and stuff actually evolved from Dante. Like, that's just kind of it just, he was really popular, he wrote some good books, and people really adopted sort of his cosmology for like, I mean, I'm not saying people, I'm saying like the church, like the Catholic Church at the time just adopted a bunch of the of the cosmology for sort of canonical systems. That's my understanding of it anyway. I could be wrong. Christianity made it into demon with exclusively evil connotation. And by the way, the Secret History of Western Esotericism podcasts is worth checking out for tabletop RPG world building ideas. Yeah, it does sound like a really fascinating podcast. I really enjoy that kind of thing, that sort of study of mythology and belief systems and things like that. I think this could be really, really a fascinating listen. And I think I did know that daemon or daimon originally had no necessarily like a good or an evil connotation. I think I did vaguely know that daimon was just like a spirit, a spiritual thing, an entity. And that later it became sort of like, again, I think because like Christianity is so hyper focused on monotheism that it's just like, well, anything that isn't within the immediate umbrella of that monotheism, which is kind of funny in itself, right? Because like, I mean, mono is literally one thing. So, I mean, you almost would think, well, anything that isn't exactly that one thing would be evil, meaning that the concept of like angels and things like that, well, that would have to be considered evil because it is not the one thing. But I guess there are exceptions being made. So I think I knew that sort of existed. And either way, like I think the fun of the word demon and daimon and things like that is the Dungeons and Dragons, the historical sort of controversy around that, and differentiation between that and by which I mean, a long time ago, Dungeons and Dragons decided, well, we're going to have demons in the Abyss, this mythical place called the Abyss, and we're going to have devils in this other place. And then separate to both of those, we're going to have daemons or daimons, and they are going to be something completely different. Now, because of the so-called satanic panic when Dungeons and Dragons was thought by a lot of some vocal people to believe to actually like literally like actually summon supernatural creatures, the Dungeons and Dragons brand had to rebrand those things and stop using the words demons and daimons and devils, and they came up with other words like Yugoloths and things like that. So it is kind of funny the history behind that and sort of the very, very intentional sort of like, oh, let's make these two things, one with a diphthong, one without, let's make them different. Let's make them different entries in our little monster book. And it's just so silly. But to a kid, like looking at this stuff, you know, when they're supposed to be doing their math homework, it was just so captivating. It's just like, oh, okay, so the AE ones are are different from just the E ones. Okay, I got it. Yeah. So silly stuff, but fun stuff. And then Hacker Defo on Mastodon also says, maybe you misspoke or maybe I misheard you, but in episode 564, you seemed to imply that SSL certs help in preventing unwarranted scraping of websites by web crawlers. And this is totally not the case. And yeah, I'm not sure. I may have gotten words mixed up. You know, sort of like thoughts crossed. I do know that SSL does not and could not prevent, like, quote unquote, unwarranted, which I'm putting that into quotes, because what is unwarranted, right? I mean, scraping of a web, that's what the web is designed for. Scrape this, go get the data from the web page. SSL would not prevent that because, I mean, SSL doesn't, it's not like a password, you know, you don't have to authenticate or something to view something that's SSL. So probably what I was trying to get to was something about encrypted traffic, maybe. And then maybe I was also saying something about scraping. I'm not sure. So I don't know what I said. I didn't go back and listen to it. Hacker Defo is correct, though. I mean, that if I implied that, or if I just flat out said it because I wasn't thinking, then that would have been wrong. I wouldn't. Yeah, SSL doesn't like prevent web scraping. SSL simply, as I've said, sort of establishes that a computer is the same computer a computer is asserting a certain claim to a specific identity. And then once you've established a connection with that computer, the traffic back and forth between you and that computer can be encrypted such that things could not eavesdrop on you and grab your plain text password, which is quite useful. Okay, so next up in this list, it looks like it's IPSet. That's a little bit confusing because it's actually talking about IPSets, S-E-T-S. And that is a kernel framework within, you know, Linux kernel. The IPSet utility establishes. And what that does is it allows you to store a chunk of IP addresses and port numbers for TCP and UDP traffic, or IP addresses with their MAC addresses, which then can be referenced as a set by some application that would need that kind of capability, for instance, IP tables. So if you're doing firewall stuff and you want to just group a bunch of things together, then the kernel can do that. It can group those things together as an IP set. And then when it needs to reference, hey, is this IP address, you know, within this subnet, or is this IP address, you know, over there on that MAC assigned to that MAC address? Or, you know, that MAC address is, then yes, it can look that up quickly, lightning fast, bang, bang, it's got all the information. So that's IPSet. And then the next entry in this list, indeed, is IPTables, which is a whole thing. IPTables is mythically complex. It is the language of firewalls. And on the one hand, it isn't that complex. I mean, it is. First of all, it's horribly documented. And I don't mean it's horribly documented by itself. I mean, the tutorials you'll come across online are horrible. They make assumptions about what you know. They use short options. So dash capital A, input. What does that mean? Is input an argument to dash A, capital A, or what is that? Well, no, it's dash dash append. That's what it is. And then what are we appending? A specific chain. Which chain? Oh, the input chain. Okay, well, that now makes a little bit more sense if you know what even you're talking about. So I don't believe that it's well sort of taught. That's what it is. It's well documented. It is not taught well. So good luck trying to sort of wade through half of the, or probably 80% of the tutorials out there on IP tables. I mean, there are some good ones, but you have to put your brain on it has to be firing on all cylinders. You're going to have to keep mapping short options back to their full option name. It is not going to be easy. You have to get the concept of rules and chains and tables. You have to understand what those are and how they relate to one another. You have to know the sort of the default targets: accept, drop, return, reject, things like that. You have to know those, and you have to know when you would do those and what they sort of mean. And it is possible, you know, with IP tables to lock yourself out of a server. I mean, you'll have to reboot the server. Maybe not that big of a deal, because unless you have saved the IP table that you have created, it gets discarded after a reboot. And that's another weird thing about IP tables, you know, is that it's all sort of loaded into memory, and you can make changes. And if you don't dump the IP table as is, or list it really, dash capital L, I think, then it goes away later. So it's a command that it just takes some getting used to, and it's a flexible command. I mean, it does a lot of the things that you would need it to do, from constructing your IP, you know, your firewall rules, to listing it so that you can dump all those rules into a text file and then reload that text file later when you relaunch IP tables, and so on. So it can be a complex process, and I've tried to appreciate it. I've tried to love it. I've tried to get into it. I don't like it. I don't enjoy IP tables. Sorry. I know some people are probably, some people love it. Some people think that that's a very efficient way of designing, sort of, and molding and sculpting their IP or their, network traffic. And yeah, I mean, it really is. It's an impressive system that seems to work really, really well. It's just there's also front ends to it, so that you don't have to bother with those specifics. And certainly the one that I would prefer to use is firewall CMD. I think that's a great command. It's a great little system. You can just add services by the service name. You can add services just by or exceptions by port. And it all kind of just works together by default to it defaults to functioning. IP tables is very raw. It is just the tools that you need to build a thing. And if you build a thing that, you like I say, like locks you out of your own server, then you've done that. Now, that said, with all of those opinions out of the way, there is a kind of elegant beauty to understanding how all of that traffic works. And so IP tables, if you sit down and play around with it, especially in like a safe environment, like a virtual machine or something like that, you kind of do get a lot of insight on exactly what a firewall can do. I mean, certainly, so first of all, you would want to, I mean, I think the first rule that you would want to insert into your IP table chain is sudo IP tables dash dash insert, and then you need a chain, and that would be input, INPUT, all capitals. So you're inserting into the input side of things, which, by the way, someone pointed out on several occasions on the internet, input and output, that's kind of weird. Input, output, very broad. What that means is incoming and outgoing. That's what that's actually saying. But unfortunately, that's not what they got named. They're called input and output. So dash dash insert input, and then dash dash source, S-O-U-R-C. So the source of this incoming or input traffic would be your current location. So maybe, I don't know, 10.0.1.0 slash 24. Really, really give yourself a wide berth. So if you're on your network and you're trying to talk to this computer and you're communicating over TCP, so that would be dash dash protocol TCP, and the destination port dash dash D port is 22, so we're using SSH here, then if all of those cases are true, then let's just jump over to a specific target. So dash dash jump accept. So I mean, there is, as I say, a kind of a beauty to this, right? So you've just said IP tables, that's the command, dash dash insert, that's what you're doing. You're inserting a new rule to this chain of rules, and the chain is the input chain. That's not something that I made up. That's just a chain. That's one of the things that IP tables allows for. There's input, there's output, or incoming and outgoing, really, but it's called input or output. So dash dash input, and then dash dash source, and you give it your, you know, the scope of what you want to accept, the protocol, rather, you know, TCP rather than UDP. The destination is port 22, because we're doing SSH, and then we jump over to the rule, the target, as they call it, which, again, there's a set number of targets. There's accept and drop and reject and something else that I'm forgetting. Then in this case, it's accept. So you've just written a rule that says, no matter what, if you get traffic from this IP set and it's going to a destination port of 22, then accept it. What does that do? That makes sure you don't lock yourself out of your own server, because the classic thing to do next is to do IP tables dash dash insert input dash dash jump drop. That's the other one, drop, which means all traffic coming to this server, ignore it, drop it, forget it, just drop it. Now that would really quickly lock you out of your server, but you've already made a rule that supersedes that says, well, I mean, incoming traffic from this IP set, that's okay, we're going to accept it as long as it's coming to port 22. So you write the one, the back door for yourself first, and then you write the next one, which is like, ignore everything. And then you can write other, you can start tweaking settings. You can say, okay, well, maybe dropping everything is a little bit drastic, because now that I think about it, I am running that web server. So yeah, I guess I need to probably make an allowance, an accept target for traffic coming on port 80 or 443, or, you know, whatever your situation is. And that's kind of the classic start to IP tables, really. Let yourself in, keep the door open for yourself, and then drop everything and start poking holes where you need to. And that's kind of the model that, like, firewall CMD uses as well. It's like, really close everything off except for the stuff that the user has defined very specifically as permissible. It's not exactly true. I mean, a dash dash insert input dash dash jump drop is really drastic. I mean, that does actually drop all traffic. I mean, that's really drastic, and you that will break things. But that's kind of the classic way to start with IP tables. Maybe that's a way to start. I mean, I wouldn't you know, start on something that that's production, you know, like mission critical in production server. Like, I would definitely just kind of make sure that you're learning that on a virtual machine or something like that, or your laptop, and just kind of see what breaks, see what happens. But that's a good way to get started. And I also highly recommend using the long options. Don't use the short options until you're really, really used to the long options and you just can't be bothered to type in dash dash jump anymore. Then you can dash J. You can't be bothered to do dash dash insert. Then you can use dash capital I, and so on. So really, like, it just, don't obfuscate this stuff from yourself. It's not worth it. Okay, let's talk about what is it called? IP traf ng, that's what it is. This is the console-based network monitoring program for Linux that displays information about IP traffic, including your current TCP connections, the types of IP packets that are being sent, and so on. So this is another one that you're going to be using with sudo. And it takes over your entire sort of screen with what's it called, incurses, and it's fascinating. It is absolutely it's a lot like ifttop. It shows you, you know, really just the traffic, and then the number of packets and the bytes and which interface it's on, and so on. But it is really fascinating, and you can get statistical breakdowns by port per device. You can get breakdowns of packet sizes, again, depending on which device it's on. You can get all kinds of information. It is absolutely just gripping. It really is. Like, it's absolutely fascinating. So try IPTraf-ng. It is very interactive. It is not a non-interactive. I mean, there may be a non-interactive mode, but I mean, really, I think the fun way to use it is in its interactive mode. You get a little incurses interface, kind of looks like, you know, the Slackware utilities, like PKG tool, that sort of thing. So, and you get to just kind of see all kinds of activity on your system that, again, you just might not necessarily think about otherwise. You might not be aware that it's happening. Next up is IPUtils. It's a collection of common networking tools. So that includes RPing, ClockDiff, Ping, Ping 6, TracePath, and so on. And this is just kind of, I mean, these are the a lot of the classic tools. We've already talked about Ping. Ping 6 is the same thing except for IPv6. TracePath is kind of like TraceRoute, you know, so you type in TracePath, 8.8.8.8, and it'll show you where across a network your little packets have been sent, and, you know, what servers it has touched, and that's pretty darn interesting sometimes. It doesn't have to be 8.8.8.8, of course. I mean, it can be any server, any host, and that can be interesting too. If you're testing your local network, you can see where on your local network something goes, and if you're testing how you're getting out onto the internet, you can see that as well. You can see what kind of gateway you're hitting, where do you get outside of your own network, at what point do you leave, and so on. So TracePath is a lot of fun. Ping is pretty cool as well. I mean, it's a lot like Ping, except it has a MAC address resolution. So, I mean, if you need to know, like, okay, well, what exactly, you know, which computer am I pinging right now? Well, use ArtPing. You'll get the MAC address of the thing. It's amazing. It's really, really cool. I mean, you'd have to know your MAC addresses really well, I guess, for that to be meaningful. But that can be super meaningful. You know, like, that can be useful. So yeah, that's really neat. RPing. So yeah, that's IPUtils. Lots of good stuff in there. And then there's IPW2100-FW. That's a package of firmware used by the IPW2100 kernel module for Intel Pro Wireless 2100 network connection. It's one of those packages that I'm really, really strangely familiar with just by name, because it's so specific. It's like, oh, IPW2100-FW. I have never needed that. Ever, but it's been there, you know. I feel like it's been there for so long. IPW2200 firmware as well is there. Again, I've never needed that yet. I mean, I might need it someday. I'm not saying I'll never need it. I'm just saying it's those are the packages. Those are two packages I always don't install, because it's just firmware for cards that I happen not to have. But I mean, that's kind of the race on Linux is always, or any platform, is, hey, can we support the latest hardware? Because there's just no coordination happening out there, apparently. And so, you know, it's the more bits and bobs you can get to make your hardware function correctly, the better. And so IPW2100 or 2200 is really, really important to somebody out there with an Intel, what was it, Pro Wireless 2100 or whatever. Just like, you know, for Broadcom people, or, you know, someone stuck with a Broadcom chip, like, getting that firmware, I mean, sometimes that can be so hard. So yeah, it's great that this exists in the official package list. And I feel like if you find an Intel Pro Wireless 2100 or 2200, then you can rest assured, from what I can tell, Slackware is going to be able to talk to it. All right, next up is IRSSI. That's the Internet Relay Chat Client. We kind of talked about this in a previous episode. I mean, not really, but I did say that IRSSI was my favorite of the clients, and I guess it kind of is. I mean, I don't know. There's other stuff too. I mean, there's really nice graphical ones that will stay open and ping you in your, you know, notifications area, which is quite nice. That said, when I was using IRC a lot more, or really at all lately. IRSSI was my favorite one. I mean, it's just the flow, the workflow of like the commands and so on is just, it just felt right. You know, it was like in the terminal and you could do things that just really quickly, just type out a quick, you know, slash shortcut command and it just happens. And it is really, really pleasant to use. Now, whether it works sort of for you or not depends, you know, it depends on whether on whether you're at your computer often enough to where the fairly subdued notifications of an IRC client is it going to attract your attention enough, you know. And at one point in my life it did, it was fine, it was great. But lately it's just, that's not my workflow. Like I'd have an IRC client loaded somewhere and I would forget about it. And I would never notice that there were incoming messages until way later. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's just, I've kind of outgrown that style or that rhythm, really. It's a matter of rhythm. I'm not saying that I wouldn't get back into it because it is still a very useful, simple protocol that I quite do respect. But for me to have it actually be useful, I'd really need to have it tied into other systems. And that is why I think if I was going to go back onto IRC, I would probably have to use one of the graphical clients within KEE, just because that way I could get like the notifications and things. The last vestige of IRC for me was an IRC channel that we used at work. And even that after a while, because I kept falling off the VPN for whatever reason, this was at an old apartment. And so then IRC would become disconnected and I would have to go back and reconnect. It was just so much work. And after a while, it became apparent that there are more modern protocols that are just a little easier to use in real life situations. That, again, said, like, that's an opinion, and it's an opinion stated sort of within kind of like my current sort of habits. And if those change, then quite possibly the opinion would change and suddenly IRC would be useful again. So to me, so I think it's still a good protocol to kind of keep in mind. And IRSSI, I think if you're going to use IRC and you want to do it in a terminal, I really think IRSSI is probably, I don't know, for my money, I think it's really the best. And I have tried others. I've tried ERC, I've tried BitchX, I've tried a couple of different ones, but IRSSI, that's the one for me, except it's not for me right now. Okay, and finally, the last of the I section within the in folder is IW, and that shows or manipulates wireless devices and their configurations. So you could, for instance, get information on your WLAN 0 card or device rather by sudo IW WLAN 0 info, which, you know, you can, you'd know that by looking at the help menu. So sudo IW, pipe it to less, and you get a pretty good list of all the different things that you could do. You can do IW dev and then the device name, so WLAN 0, AP stop, which would shut that down, or start, which would activate that device. You can, as I said, IW device name and then info, and you'll get a bunch of information about the WLAN device. So I've got interface WLAN 0, if index 3, WDEV 0x1, don't know what that means, adder, and then it gives me what looks like my MAC address for that device, type manage, and so on. So you've got information about the device itself, about the interface. Lots of different commands that you can use to interact with a wireless device fairly directly. And this is true as long as your device uses a driver based on the MAC 80211 stack, although work apparently is underway to make it useful for other wireless drivers as well. So your mileage may vary here. IW might return that it doesn't know what your device is or can't tell you anything about your device at all. So it kind of depends on the wireless card. I'm not even using wireless on this desktop. It has a wireless card somewhere in there, but I'm not using it. I'm hardwired on this machine. So it's a very limited use to me. And if you're using, again, if you're using Network Manager, it's probably even less useful to you because you probably don't even need to interact this much with your wireless device. But if you want to, you certainly can. That this is the path for relatively direct access to your network interface card that is wireless. I believe that's everything. That's all the I's within the in folder of the Slackware software set. Yes, I have just confirmed that. That's I. So next up is the K's, and that lasts for exactly one package. And then there's a bunch of L's that we'll have to go through, which of course gets us into things with starting with lib, but not as much as you'd think. So we're making progress. That was about 10 packages that we got through today, which I think that's my goal now. So I think we've done all right. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening. My name's Klaatu. You can reach me anytime over email with feedback or comments, tips, or just to say hi. My email address is klaatu@slackermedia.info. You can also reach me on the Mastodon network, not Klaatu, at mastodon.xyz. The show's intro and outro music is by Fat Chance Lester. You can find their music on bandcamp.com or on gnuworldorder.info. In the archive, you'll find a music directory containing the album from which this music has been extracted. Until next time, thanks for listening, and keep the source open.
Where are you going? Don't you find enough to interest you here?